Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, fall sports season is back, and so are the bumps and bruises that come with it. We have advice on nursing the Saturday morning pains after Friday night games with the newest member of the team at Blanchard Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Also this morning, before finishing off summer programs and transitioning to fall events, the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts is holding their first ever Day of Giving this week. Executive Director Heather Klo will tell us what's happening. And want to take a final road trip before the end of summer or a scenic getaway this fall? A great adventure is waiting just a few hours to our east. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, August 26th, 2024. Just in case you ever wondered if anyone ever got arrested for this, because we hear these stories all the time, and but you very rarely actually hear the follow-up that somebody is going to be held accountable for this. A teenager is now in custody following a prank active shooter call at Whitehall Yearling High School in suburban Columbus. Sparked pure chaos, obviously, was made on Thursday, sent the school into a level 3 lockdown. Hundreds of students escaped the school thinking that there's an active shooter. They got a level 3 lockdown. That usually means active shooter. And so students panicked, obviously. Several, I don't know, it says hundreds of them ran out of the school, ran to their homes or to neighbors' homes, strangers' homes, started pounding on the door trying to get in. Obviously, a heavy police response. And now officials say a 16-year-old girl who does not attend the school has been taken into custody in relation to the incident. No information on her identity or the motive for her actions. They have not said what charges she may face. None of that information has been made public, but I wanted to share it. I saw it on the Newswire this morning, and I thought, you know, that's one of those things we hear about these stories all the time. Very rarely do we actually hear the aftermath of that, the follow-up. So rarely those things. Often they happen, you know, the calls come in from other states or even out of the country. And so they're very difficult to track down. But in this case, a 16-year-old girl, again, who does not attend the school, has been taken into custody on it. That's the only way you're going to stop these things, if people get the book thrown at them. I mean, you know. So anyway, kind of interesting. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started. Did you hear about the two astronauts who have been stranded on the International Space Station because the Boeing Starliner spacecraft that took them there apparently can't get them home? They're having issues. Boeing is having more issues. It's just another black mark on Boeing's once stellar record for quality and safety. And there's something wrong with the Starliner. I don't know what all it is, but there's something wrong. They don't know that they can get the astronauts home safely. And so now, the administrator of NASA, Bill Nelson, announced over the weekend that Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams, the two astronauts, will come home on a SpaceX capsule in February. They were supposed to be there for 8 days. They're going to be there for 8 months. Talk about overstaying your welcome. Weren't we talking about this on was it Friday or was it Thursday of last? I don't remember. Last week we were talking about the most annoying thing that house guests can do. And one of the top things on the list, people say house guests who overstay their welcome is just one of the most annoying. You talk about overstaying your welcome. They were supposed to be there for 8 days on the International Space Station. They're going to be there for 8 months. The test flight of Starliner has been plagued by helium leaks and thruster issues since its launch back in June. NASA will attempt to undock the Starliner capsule from the International Space Station and then fly it uncrewed remotely, for a landing in New Mexico. So it's not like they're going to just release the Starliner and let it float off into space as another piece of space junk. They're going to try and get it home, but they don't feel confident enough to actually do so with a crewed, with a crewed mission. They don't want the human beings on board because they're not confident enough in its ability to get home safely. So the two astronauts will come home on a SpaceX capsule in February. Wow. You leave in June. You think you'll be home, certainly, by what they... I think they were supposed to be home, like, right around 4th of July, and now it'll be Valentine's Day before they... Going to miss Thanksgiving and Christmas and all of that. Wow. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories from over the weekend. Sad news. The baseball stadium in California that was featured in the Hollywood blockbuster film A League of Their Own has been destroyed by a fire. The J. Littleton Ballpark in Ontario, California went up in flames about 11:30 p.m. on Thursday. And has been declared a total loss. Did you hear about this? Really sad news. City spokesperson says the stadium's grandstand, wooden grandstand, likely burned very quickly. It dates back to the 1930s when the stadium was built. Yeah, it says here it was completed in 1937, and the ballpark was a designated historic landmark since 2003. And in 2021, listed on the National Register of Historic Places, most famous as the set for the movie A League of Their Own back several years ago. And it had been still very much in use by local leagues and, you know, things like that. It was really sad to see it burn. I saw some of the pictures and it was, wow, just really, really sad. So... I mean, I hope they rebuild, but you can't replace something like that with all of the history and all of that. They say they have had problems with vandals in recent years, but there's no official word on whether it was arson or anything like that. They really don't know what happened at this point. So, sad news. Here's something kind of interesting. A new pizza topping making waves in Sweden. So, what is the most unusual topping that you like on your pizza? In this country, it seems like the biggest debate is over pineapple on pizza, right? Does pineapple belong on pizza? You see it, several pizza places have their Hawaiian pizza. My wife loves the Hawaiian pizza. Pineapple on the pizza, she gives it a big thumbs up. No. Not for me. And people have very, very strong opinions of this. But in Sweden, the latest pizza topping that is making waves, banana. You heard that right. Bananas on your pizza. It's called a Tropicana pizza. And a slice of Tropicana pizza would contain pineapple and banana and curry along with smoked ham. They call it the Tropicana pizza. According to curators of the official social media account of the nation of Sweden, I didn't know they had an official national Twitter account or X account, but they do. And according to the curators of said account, banana topped pizza is the most Swedish pizza there is. American Andrew Campbell, in response to the post about the banana-topped pizza, said, "I've had banana curry pizza a few times in Sweden, and it is honestly surprisingly good." He said, "It's a lot better than you would expect." So, man, leave it to those crazy Europeans and those Nordic countries to take pineapple pizza and take it one step further. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. One step, a banana on your pizza. Would you or would you not? Again, I think not. But you might want to try it. You want to be the latest trendy thing. And the the other continent over there. And here's something to think about on a Monday. Lastly, among the first things you need to know to start your week. If you are waking up this morning and you think your weekend was not as relaxing as you had hoped, maybe you should be asking yourself if your living room is stressing you out. A group of therapists spoke with Business Insider about how the room of your home that is designed for rest and relaxation could actually be having the opposite effect. For one, light-colored living room furniture could create a showroom feel, a sterile-feeling space that makes you or your guests uncomfortable. Does your room feel too sterile? A sterile-feeling space makes people feel uncomfortable. Such a scheme can be stressful when you want to get comfortable, but it can also make you fear creating stains or leaving dirt or marks that will definitely show because it's all light colored. So it can stress you out. Lighting also plays a big part. While the research on color psychology is mixed, it does appear that depression is helped by white and green light. So the therapists say open those windows and doors when you can for fresh air. Your TV could be stressing you out, too. They suggest turning off the tube when you're not watching and swapping it out for calming music instead. And, of course, clutter is a big no-no. A dirty space, an untidy space, can signal chaos and discomfort to our bodies, which can, in turn, create stress and tension. And they even said that loose wires and cords from electronic devices can be visually disturbing. So tidy up, you know, those cords and such from the back of your TV or your stereo or whatever, or at least get them out of sight. Let's see here. They say worn out furniture, not only light colored living room furniture creating the sterile environment is not the only problem with the furniture. Worn out furniture could be bringing you down as well. If the living room couch is old and dirty or outdated, you may not feel as relaxed being in that space. And if you are among those who, at least part of the time, work from home, create a separate area where you work versus relax to create a physical and mental separation between the two. So some of the things, if you are not as relaxed heading back to work on Monday, this Monday morning, getting up and getting going this morning, if you're not as relaxed from a nice weekend of R&R as you wish you were, it could be your own home is working against you. Something to think about there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the low 90s, partly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 70s. There was an event held at Dorney Plaza in front of the Finley Municipal Building for Hancock County Overdose Awareness Day. The event included free Narcan testing and survival bags for people who attended the event. Nicole Daly is project coordinator and peer support supervisor at Focus Recovery and Wellness.
The purpose of this event is to educate people and reduce stigma around people who do use drugs and keeping people alive. It's easy to say, why don't you just don't use drugs? But with people's traumas and, you know, mental health conditions, unfortunately, that's a big feat.
Give more details on the resources available locally to people at risk of overdosing in the story on our website. Officials say more of Ohio is in extreme drought than at any other time in the past 20 years.
The greatest concentration is in the southeast corner of the state. In 1 week, the extreme conditions went from 1% of the state to 12%. Recent storms appear to have brought little relief, as this is the highest share of Ohio that has been hit with extreme drought since 2000. The danger is crop damage and yield from corn to soybeans and everything in between.
ONN's Jay Fox reporting that a lack of hay for livestock and fire danger is also a possibility in these dry conditions. Finley Trojans football season got off to an inauspicious start with senior quarterback Ryan Montgomery getting injured, but it didn't take long for backup quarterback Riley Korkos to assert himself.
Throws that interior screen, finds Ragland, finds a seam, splits it across midfield, foot race, he's at the 30, he's at the 20, 10, 5, touchdown Trojans! 69-yard pitch catch and run from Korkos to Ragland.
Pretty nice to have your first pass go for a touchdown, huh?
The Trojans would end up falling to the defending state champs, Central Catholic, 54-21. The Trojans' home opener is Friday night against Lima. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning, fall sports season is back, and so are the bumps and bruises that come with it. We have some advice this morning on nursing the Saturday morning pains that come after the Friday night games. Dr. Lucas McCain is with us this morning. He is the newest member of the team at Blanchard Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and thanks very much for dropping by.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Welcome to the community. Yeah, you said you've been settled in for about a month or so.
Yeah, Finley feels like home. I'm from a small town in Worcester, Ohio, Buckeye born and raised, and looking forward to kind of getting settled here in Finley. My wife and I are really enjoying it. So.
Well, it is good to have you. As we mentioned, this perfect timing because the fall sports season is now underway. This is a time when I'm sure you see a number of those bumps and bruises, you know, the day after games and the Monday after the Friday night games, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of bumps and bruises, especially with football, you know, being a very contact sport. So definitely absolutely. Kind of bumps and bruises season.
So, of course, here locally, as folks know, Ryan Montgomery went down first week of the season. So, I mean, these are things that can happen no matter how good you prepare, no matter how good you warm up and that pregame routine and so on, injuries are possible. That being said, those routines are very important.
Exactly. I think, you know, being conditioned and being ready to play, you know, before the season starts is a big factor, getting in shape, getting game ready. Obviously, when they talk about injury prevention, there are certain specific programs, ACL prevention programs, which have been shown to work. But I think in general, making sure that you're kind of conditioned and, you know, ready for the season is kind of a big injury prevention mitigator.
So for young people who are involved in, you know, organized sports at like the high school level or the college level, they have those programs, those routines, and one would hope that they are developed with professionals such as yourself to, you know, to be effective. But for those who may be involved in recreational programs where it's, you know, mom and dad are coaching, or just, you know, for all of us who may be, you know, jogging, riding our bikes, whatever, what should those routines sort of entail kind of in general?
Yeah, I think it depends on the activity itself. I think injuries kind of occur more commonly when you're fatigued. And so I think being aware of that, staying kind of in game shape, you know, a lot of times if you're doing a high, you know, quick intensity sport, doing plyometric type training, which is incorporated into that kind of ACL prevention programs that we talked about. But I think more or less just staying conditioned for whatever sport you're doing. I think because as you get fatigued, I think the injury rate increases. And so being aware of that and, you know, being conscious of that before you participate.
So what I hear you saying is kind of easing into whatever activity you are taking part in.
Exactly. Yeah. We see some of those weekend warrior type injuries. You know, yeah. I think somebody that doesn't necessarily practice all week long and then goes hard on a Saturday, I think that's kind of probably when you're probably most at risk.
Once, you know, something like that happens and these things do happen, what's the best way to rehab? Let's say that I, you know, tweak my ankle or my knee hurts and, you know, the day after my activity, whatever it might happen to be. Are there certain things that we can do to sort of nurse that?
Yeah, I think initially the first, you know, 24 to 72 hours, a lot of it is reducing swelling and inflammation, you know, so you'll hear the RICE protocol, rest, ice, you know, elevation, compression. And I think that holds true for most kind of minor bumps and bruises, minor sprains and stuff like that. So kind of mitigating that swelling in the first 24 to 72 hours. And then the rest is kind of strengthening those dynamic stabilizers or the muscles around the joint to help protect it from further injury. So I think once that swelling and kind of inflammation subsides and your pain gets reduced, I think then kind of engaging in a physical therapy type program to kind of, you know, nurse the muscles around the joint back to health. So
I guess my biggest the biggest concern that I would always have, and I think we've all had these, is that when you kind of quote-unquote tweak something, how soon is too soon to get back into whatever activity you were doing that caused that problem in the first place? Because I would imagine rushing back into it can just make the problem worse.
Exactly. That's a good point. Rushing back into it absolutely can make it worse. I think if you're having pain and swelling, persistent pain and swelling is probably too soon. Okay. I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, rehabbing for sport, you know, the first thing is you got to get the swelling down, you got to get your pain down, and you got to be able to participate in, you know, rehab exercises without pain. There's a difference between getting muscle soreness and pain. But if you're having true pain with kind of your rehab exercises, you're probably too soon. And so I think, you know, easing into it, you should be able to perform your rehab exercises without pain, quote unquote.
So. You make a good point, difference between pain and just general soreness. So if I'm sore, you know, the next day or even hours after I've, you know, done something, you know, some physical activity, that's not necessarily, just being sore is not necessarily something to be overly concerned about, is it? Or is it?
No, I think general soreness, especially muscular soreness, is you know, our body's response to kind of physical activity. We get that lactic acid build up and we get that muscular soreness. I think pain is different. Pain is, you know, would kind of inhibit you from performing your activity or getting back to sport. I think, you know, I think that is different than just kind of generalized soreness from an intense workout.
Recognizing that difference is important. And how do we know, again, when we're talking about organized sports at like the high school level, again, there will be trainers on site and so on who can evaluate that at least initially and say, well, this is probably going to be something that you'll want to, you know, go to the doctor for. If we're just doing it on ourselves or, you know, in a lower level type of organized event, we may not have that expert analysis. So how do we know when it's something more serious than we can take care of with a few days rest?
I think that's a good point. I think especially if you have access to a trainer, you know, they're specialized in kind of diagnosing and managing those on-field injuries. I think if you're kind of a day-to-day recreational athlete, I think if it inhibits your ability to participate in that given sport, if it hinders your performance, I think that's maybe a time when you should get checked out. Minor bumps and bruises don't usually impact your ability to play. And then ultimately, what I look for, too, is joint swelling. So, for instance, like in the knee, you know, minor bumps and bruises shouldn't lead to kind of an intra-articular or joint swelling, intra-articular fusion. I get more suspicious. Is there something going on inside the joint that may need attention if your joint's swelling, especially recurrent swelling? It's probably something that you should get checked out. So,
you know, we talk about, you know, fall sports and all of that. We're coming up on the winter season when injuries can happen for all a number of reasons. Obviously, we've got to, you know, snow and ice and all of that. We hate to think about it, but it is coming. What are the things that we need to keep in mind when we get into those winter months?
I think trying to avoid falls, especially in our older population. You know, we talk about sports-related injuries, but ice and snow kind of become a bigger factor as we get older. When you talk about, you know, hip fractures and kind of shoulder-related injuries that you fall into a wrist. And so I think, you know, being aware of the snow and taking things slow. And then I think, again, maintaining a level of fitness to where you can kind of, you know, better catch yourself, better able to protect yourself is important as well. So
Are these things more likely to happen? I guess I'm wondering, those warm-up routines and those, you know, the stretching and all of that, is that even more important in the winter when it is physically cold outside and your body is physically cold in addition to everything else?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think staying loose and stretched out and warmed up. A lot of our winter sports, aside from football, are indoors, thankfully. So, staying warm is easier there. But, I think staying warmed up loose, especially for football, you know, making sure, you know, if you're standing on the sidelines, you know, staying loose is important.
So. I see people like jogging around in my neighborhood, you know, all months out of the year. I think that's crazy personally, but, you know, people do it. And I'm just wondering, are you more likely to, you know, stretch a muscle or, you know, pull a muscle if it's cold to begin with?
I think that's a possibility. I think more or less, maintaining your physical fitness in the winter is very important, especially for those generalized kind of avoiding those general accidents. So if you're running, obviously be cautious of the ice, but I wouldn't caution somebody against doing that in the winter. So,
yeah. And by the way, before we get to all of that, I should ask about this, because coming up this week, we're going to have some very, very hot temperatures. That present any special problems with respect to overdoing it in the heat?
Yeah, I worry a little bit less about orthopedic type injuries in the heat. I worry more about dehydration type injuries. Obviously, we talk about heat illness, heat exhaustion, which are kind of the more severe spectrum when you start to have, you know, cognitive issues related to just overheating. Mm-hmm. But general dehydration, you know, so I think being cognizant of the heat and staying hydrated are very important just for, you know, general overall health and not even maybe musculoskeletal. Yeah, we definitely get worried about that. We've, you know, most sports-related programs, especially football, or take steps to kind of mitigate that, but it can be a real problem.
So. Yeah, definitely got to be. Every season presents its own unique challenges and opportunities for injury, I guess, is the bottom line.
Absolutely, and I think a big thing is being cognizant of what, you know, sport you're playing and what injuries kind of pertain to that sport, and, you know, a general injury prevention program, you know, specific to your sport can help kind of prevent those day-to-day injuries. So
that is such a good point. I mean, it, you know, like you said, different sports present the opportunities. I mean, you can get any injury in any sport.
Absolutely.
In the right circumstances, but certain injuries are going to be more common to certain activities. So maybe that's a perfect segue to talk with a physical therapist such as yourself, and orthopedist such as yourself, to find out what those injuries are and what you can do to keep them from happening in the first place.
Exactly. You know, we think about sports like men's and women's soccer, basketball, football being kind of the high-risk ACL-type injuries. And so, you know, from my standpoint, you know, incorporating ACL prevention programs, which have been shown to reduce the risk of injury, maybe relevant to those sports. When we think about baseball, we think about shoulder. You know, so incorporating some stretching exercises and cuff stabilization-type exercises are important, you know, maybe to mitigate injuries to those overhead athletes. And so I think being cognizant of you know, what's your goals, what sports are you playing, and then, you know, it doesn't need to be your entire workout, but incorporating small routines to kind of strengthen those, you know, injury preventative musculature, I think is very important. So
talking about nursing the bumps and bruises that come with the fall sports season and beyond, really any season. Again, Dr. Lucas McCain is the newest member of the team at Blanchard Valley Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with us this morning. Dr. McCain, thanks very much for taking the time.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
A lot going on at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts in the coming weeks before finishing off summer programs and transitioning fall events in the month of September. They are holding their first ever Day of Giving this week as well. Heather Close here from the Marathon Center with all of the details. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So first of all, let's talk about the wrap-up of a couple of the summer events.
Yes.
The last Lunchtime Live series event is tomorrow,
correct? Tomorrow, yeah. Right, with James Adkins, who is a local favorite, of course, and King's Concessions will be there with some food.
Very cool.
Yeah, and we extended it a little bit this year, and it's been very popular throughout the month.
So for those who don't know, this is just a great opportunity to come out to the parks, to the Waterfalls Pavilion, right?
Yes, it's at the Waterfalls Pavilion, and it's 11 to 1-ish, mm-hmm. and people come and they bring their lunch or they buy a lunch and just listen to great music, and it's all for free.
Yeah, right there at Riverside Park, so, and it should be, you know, great weather tomorrow.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be beautiful.
So, yeah, it'd be a great opportunity, sort of one last fun blast of live music in the park for the summer.
Summer hurrah.
Then also coming up, what I guess this is next week, the last of the food trucks.
Yes, so it's the first Wednesday of the month. So yeah, we've got one more in September, and that's great. We get usually 5 or 6 trucks. You just come. You can sit in our lobby if it's warm, or sit outside. We have some picnic tables and just enjoy all the local food trucks in one place.
It's right there in the parking lot.
Right in our parking lot.
That is next Wednesday, September 24th, and that runs from...
They're usually there by 11 and stay till 1:30 or 2-ish, depending on the crowd.
So drop on by for lunch.
Yeah.
You do have a handful of shows coming up in September as well. Live at Arms production.
Yes, so we're kicking off the Live at Arms series for next season, and that's on September 12th, and that's with Damn Tall Buildings.
Okay, tell us about this group here.
So this is the second time they've been there. That's how much I like them. The tagline we're using is "Not Your Grandpa's Bluegrass Band." So it's really young, fresh bluegrass, incredibly talented musicians. There's 3 of them. And yeah, you just come out, just hang out, listen to the music, grab a glass of wine or a beer, and it's a fun time.
And again, for those who are not familiar, the Live at Arms series, much more intimate than the main stage shows.
It is. So it's in Arms Hall, but we set it up club style, so you don't feel like you're at a business meeting or a wedding reception. Mm-hmm. There's great lighting and some great set pieces. It just feels like you're in a little folk club in the middle of Findlay.
Yeah.
And you know, they're really gaining in popularity, so if people want to come, I recommend getting tickets early, because those shows are really selling well this year, which is exciting.
That is Thursday, September 12th.
It is.
And there are tickets. That's the one thing about the Live at Arms series, is that it's obviously a much more intimate venue or setting, but much fewer tickets.
Exactly. We only sell like 120 tickets versus 969 in the theater.
So definitely want to get your tickets for that. And you can get the tickets for the entire series.
You can, and yes, and you get a discount if you do that.
Okay.
And we have one a month, and they're always on a Thursday. So it's not always the same Thursday, but it's always a Thursday.
Okay.
And there's one each month through May.
All right. So Damn Tall Buildings is the first, and that on the 12th of September. You have a rental show coming up. This is not part of the main stage series, but these are always a lot of fun, and it is classic Seger.
It
My
is
goodness.
Bob Seger. Everybody here loves Bob Seger, right?
Yeah.
And this is, I think, the second time this show has been there, and it sells really well, and it's just a really great way to hear some Bob Seger music if you can't get to a Bob Seger show.
Yeah, some terrific music. And I'm not sure how much Seger actually performs live.
I don't think he does much anymore.
Yeah, so this is an opportunity to see that music live.
It is.
Terrific show. So tickets are on sale for that as well.
Yes,
now, right?
Absolutely.
That is Friday, September 13th. Speaking of shows, I know this isn't actually until the beginning of October, but we'll mention The Music Man, the Youth Theater production.
Yes, the Youth Theater production, grade 6 through 12. They're rehearsing every single day right now. And we keep hearing all that great Music Man throughout the theater.
I think it's so cool to sort of rediscover the classics to have the kids do one of those classic musicals. I mean, the Disney shows and the younger shows, those are terrific, but there's something about the Broadway classics.
Absolutely. You know, and our goal is to educate students, not only just have them on stage, but educate them. And you have to know about those classics in theater. You know, they can't all be a Little Mermaid. And I'm dating myself there with my Disney reference. But
exactly. No, I get what you're saying. You also have, continuing through the month of October, a show in the art gallery that is terrific.
PAX Wanda. And I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's all tapestries done by women from Rwanda, and they are beautiful. There's wildlife and there's people. You can't touch them, but it's very tempting because you just want to feel that it's tapestry because it looks like painting. It's gorgeous.
It is amazing the work that those artisans in Africa do.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And we have prints for sale, too. So you can take some of them home, but you can buy some of them, but the prints are nice, too.
And that is at the Fisherwall Art Gallery, which is open really any time that the Marathon Center
is open. Anytime the building is open. Yeah. You know, a lot of people come before shows or at intermission, but whenever our box office is open, you know, we can come. So definitely 11 through 4, Monday through Friday, but often other times.
And if you don't know where that is within the building, it's up on the top floor.
It's on the top floor, yep. Yeah. So where you go into the balcony, our administrative offices are up there, and then the art gallery.
Very cool. Do check that out if you get the opportunity. That runs through the near the end of October.
Yeah, October 21st.
Okay. So with all of those things going on, we have also mentioned that coming up this week, tomorrow, in fact, it is your first annual Day of Giving. Tell us about this.
So I think sometimes people forget that MCPA is a nonprofit. You know, we get a lot of great shows and people see those and they don't stop to think that we do a lot of education work and a lot of outreach work. And so we've decided to have a day of giving to highlight that and also provide an opportunity that's not Giving Tuesday or a big other giving time for people to donate to MCPA. It's also Rock, Paper, Scissors Day. So that's our theme.
Okay.
So what our hope is that you will make a donation and then challenge somebody to rock, paper, scissors. And if they lose lose, they have to match your donation.
Ah, okay. that works.
Yeah, so far, so good. We have we got a lot of people interested, and we're hoping people will post videos.
Is there a fundraising goal for this?
For this, it's $25,000.
Okay.
Just for the one day.
Yeah. And you bring up the point that there is so much that goes on at the Marathon Center, and we've kind of talked about this some in the past. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes. We talk about the shows, and we talk about all of the opportunities for people to come out. And again, whether we're talking about the main stage shows or the more intimate shows, the youth theater shows, but a lot of what you do happens without a big crowd there at the Marathon Center.
Absolutely. I mean, we have workshops for kids and for adults, or even we're talking about Lunchtime Live or the Riverside Civic Band Series. You know, those are free to the public, but they cost us money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an investment we're happy to make in the community, but we're hoping that the community supports them as well.
Yeah. And even many of the main stage shows are not money makers per se. I think a lot of times people think, well, you know, you've got all of those shows. Don't they finance all of the other things that you do?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Especially since we changed our programming model a couple of years ago. And I think I talked to you about that, how we're getting bigger shows.
Yeah.
Because that's what Finley and the surrounding communities want to see. If we break even on a show, I think that's a success without corporate sponsors and donations and things like that.
And fortunately, the community is responded in that way to support the shows with the corporate dollars and so on. And I know, there is endowment money and so on that help with that as well.
Yes.
But again, that is for those front-looking events, and it doesn't cover all of those other things that really make the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts the tremendous resource in the community that it is.
Right, and I focus on the community. I always describe MCPA as a community performing arts center.
Yeah.
You know, we support a lot of nonprofits that come in and do fundraisers there, and we deeply discount those rental rates because we want them to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also a nonprofit, and
right.
So, you know, donations help support that. So in a way, you're supporting a lot of different organizations by supporting MCPA.
That's a good point. So how do folks give?
Online is the best, mcpa.org/donate.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I know we mentioned that tomorrow is the, you know, the day of giving, the rock, paper, scissors, give is the theme. But you can do that anytime, and you encourage that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we're always excited to see donations. Even when you buy tickets, if you just add it on $2 or $3, you know, that makes a difference.
And by the way, when you do that, when you become a patron, there are some perks that go along with that.
There are. If you give $150 more a year, you get early access to tickets. And we just started an Ovation Club as well. And that's for donors who give $1,000 a year or more. And there's some really great benefits to that. We're going to have an annual dinner. And there's rumor we may have a private bar lounge for those Ovation Club members.
Oh.
So if you don't like standing in a bar line, you might want to consider that.
All right. Very good. Folks want more information on ways to give and more information about all the shows and all of that. It's all right there at the website.
Right? It is mcpa.org.
Okay, very good. We've got it linked up at our webpage as well at goodmornings.net. And again, Heather Clough, director of the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, with us talking about things that are coming up in the month of September and, of course, the Day of Giving that is happening this week as well. Heather, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Let this be a lesson to any of you youngins who are waking up this morning and thinking, I just don't want to go to school today. A boy in New York City who was feared missing was caught by a news helicopter playing hooky from school. After the 9-year-old didn't show up for school like he was supposed to, parents, in a panic, called police. And a news helicopter, local news helicopter, was dispatched to the scene to cover the story, only to find the boy relaxing on the rooftop of his apartment building. Reporter Dan Rice said, "We caught the image on the rooftop of the apartment building, zoomed in with the camera, and it appeared to be the child that fit the description of the missing boy. So, of course, they radioed officers who responded to the roof, arrived on the scene, and gave the chopper a big thumbs up. He just wanted to play hooky for the day. Probably didn't figure that it would cause all that much fuss. The story comes on, it goes on to say it is unclear for how long the child will be grounded. got a little more than he bargained for on that one, I guess. Speaking of the Big Apple, I have another story out of New York City. A bizarre crime in Central Park had an unusual ending. It all happened Saturday morning, shortly before 8 a.m. at East 106th Street and East Drive. The New York Post reports that an armed thief swiped a man's phone at gunpoint, but then quickly returned it and apologized, saying it wasn't the phone he was looking for. What? It was not the phone that he was looking for. The victim says the suspect then fled the scene after the botched robbery, so he remains at large. Took the phone at gunpoint and then said, hey, I don't want this. See, this is a perfect reason why you should never have the latest and greatest. I mean, just have an old beater phone and you don't have to worry about it being stolen. Nobody wants it. Oh my. I have a feeling if they catch up with this guy, he's still going to be in trouble, even though he returned it, even though he apologized. Yeah. On the opposite coast, out of La La Land, here is a bizarre story. Officials say four Russian-made hand grenades were found in a tree in Los Angeles. Yeah, that's a little bizarre. Four Russian-made hand grenades found in a tree in Los Angeles. A gardener discovered the ordnance in the Baldwin Park neighborhood on Thursday and reported it to authorities, who told local news reporters that members of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's bomb squad rendered the grenades safe and they were taken back to the sheriff's firing range for disposal. It is unknown who the grenades belong to or how they ended up in a tree. Wow. That is bizarre. And a very odd discovery. Elsewhere in the broken news, sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the strange stories. A man in Huron County, Ohio, so not that far from here, Huron County, man is facing charges after he allegedly tried to buy sex acts with a minor, entice a minor with Wendy's French fries. Which are very good, very tasty. But yeah, this is a no-no. 47-year-old Jonathan Collins communicated with what he thought was a 15-year-old girl, turned out to be an undercover agent. He agreed to pay the teen for certain acts using cash and Wendy's French fries. When I shouldn't laugh. I mean, the underlying story is very serious, obviously, but come on. Really? French fries? That's promised the girl an order of piping hot Wendy's French fries. Well, Mr. Collins met up at the agreed upon location. He was taken into custody on multiple charges. And so the story has a happy ending, I guess, but Wendy's French fries. Come on, man. Yeesh. let's see here. And a couple of other items in the broken news. Seems that some people can make themselves at home just about anywhere. And experts will say that, you know, doing housework in the nude is not anything to be ashamed of. Unless you're not doing it in your own home. A man in Georgia was arrested recently after he inexplicably began stripping down in a laundromat in Georgia, Coffee County, Georgia. When police arrived on the scene, 55-year-old David Bennett had his shirt off and his shorts down. He never explained why he was taking off his clothes, although it was a laundromat. I mean, maybe he needed to wash them and he didn't have anything else to wear. He was charged with indecent exposure and has been released pending a court date. As I said, you know, doing your housework in the nude is not a terrible thing necessarily, but only as long as you're in your own home, you know. It's And finally, in the broken news this morning, a bald eagle in Missouri that was thought to have been injured, turns out the eagle was not injured. He was just too fat to fly. The Missouri Department of Conservation recently captured what was assumed to be a wounded eagle at the Wilson's Creek National Battlefield Memorial. Officials say the bird was unable to fly, but it turned out he wasn't hurt. He was just stuffed after eating some raccoon roadkill. He was just too full to fly. The eagle has since been rehabilitated and released back into the park. I don't feel that bad overdoing it on, Thanksgiving morning or something, you know? It's, I know how that eagle feels. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Buckeyes play here on WFIN and 95.5 FM.
He eludes two defenders, eludes the third, throws up the left side, intercepted to the 50-yard line. And bringing it up is Lathan Ransom to the Maryland 40. Tackled at the Maryland 39 by Jayshon Jones. Lathan Ransom with his second career interception.
The Buckeyes open the season at home this Saturday with Akron. Airtime is 2 p.m. Buckeye football on WFIN and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. I love this with the proliferation of technology these days and artificial intelligence. Is AI intelligent enough to hold a grudge? The story here says, does AI believe in karma? 39% of Americans in a new survey, 39% of Americans believe that one day the way we treat AI, Alexa, Siri, all of those other digital assistants and robots and all of that, 39% of Americans believe that one day the way we treat machines will be taken into account in some way. The survey of 2,000 adults finds that 56% of Gen Zers say that they are deliberately polite when speaking to their digital assistant, Google or Alexa or Siri or whatever. They're very polite when speaking to their AI assistant compared to just 39% of baby boomers. They don't feel the need to be polite to a machine. I guess it's a good habit to get into. We should always be polite, right? Only 7% of respondents say that they are impolite, deliberately impolite with artificial intelligence, and men are more likely than women to swear at the machines. So as we begin the countdown to Labor Day weekend, the folks at AAA are out with their latest report on the travel trends for the last big summer getaway weekend. Overall, AAA says domestic travel for Labor Day weekend will be up 9% as compared to last year. While the cost of taking that trip in the U.S. down 2%. It says here, Americans traveling by car can expect to see lower gas costs. Typical cost for gasoline now stands at $3.50 a gallon, which is quite a bit lower than last year. $3.81 is where it was last year over the Labor Day weekend. Overall demand for gas is down, driven in part by the pandemic enabling remote work, which is still a lingering thing, which has changed driving habits. So even though demand will be up over the travel, road trip getaways and so on for the Labor Day weekend, overall demand is lower. Fewer Americans are planning to travel internationally this Labor Day as compared to last year, according to AAA data. While the cost of domestic trips are down slightly, the cost of international travel is up 11%, which is one of the reasons why people are not going out of the country as much. They say roads and airports will start to get busy beginning on Thursday ahead of Labor Day weekend. Roads expected to be most congested in the afternoon and early evening on Thursday and Friday, which is no big surprise there. If you are traveling those days, aim to hit the road in the morning to avoid traffic jams. If you aren't taking off until Saturday, it's best to wait until the afternoon to depart, because it would be Saturday morning that the crowds will be hitting the roads or taking to the skies. Traffic is expected to be the heaviest in the afternoon on Sunday and on Labor Day Monday itself, September 2nd. The top destinations for Labor Day travel, this according, again, to AAA, Seattle, Washington is number one on the list of domestic destinations. Seattle. Orlando is number two, maybe going to Disney for a quick getaway to finish off the summer. Then comes Anchorage, Alaska, which is kind of interesting. New York City, Boston, round out the top five, and the rest of the top ten, Las Vegas, Denver, Chicago, and Juneau, Alaska. Really interesting that Alaska has two locations in the top 10 domestic destinations for Labor Day weekend travel. It's the only state with two locations, Anchorage and Juneau. The top international destinations include Vancouver, Rome, London, Paris, and Dublin, Ireland. Obviously not Ohio. The top five international destinations. But for most of us, we're probably not going that far. Maybe it's just one final road trip before the end of the summer travel season. Or maybe you are starting at this point to think about a quick autumn weekend getaway once the leaves start to change. Well, joining us this morning is the founder of Passport Mommy, family travel expert Michelle Gerson, with some tips and advice on how to plan a great adventure over a long weekend. And today, Michelle, we're headed east to the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, which you say is the great American getaway. How so?
Yes, it sure is. Because you know those places that have it all? Well, this is Pennsylvania. It's got the big city energy, outdoor adventure. It has the small town charm all rolled into one. You can basically go hiking on a remote trail in the morning. Then you can grab a cup of coffee and walk the streets of a charming cobblestone town. And then head into the heart of the city for a James Beard award-winning meal, all within 1 hour drive. And, of course, Philly fans love their sporting events. So if you do attend a sporting event, you know it will be high energy. There are so many festivals. And then you have the peace and quiet of the state park. So there's definitely something for everyone.
Now, we mentioned, the last big weekend of the summer travel season coming up. But, if you're past the summer mindset now, maybe you're planning ahead for the autumn. You have some great advice for a perfect, maybe extended weekend sometime this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. When I think of fall, I think of Pennsylvania because it just has such amazing fall foliage. And actually, Travel and Leisure just announced that Bucks County is their choice for the best place to go leaf peeping for 2024. So you can head to Bucks County. Yes, you can head to the PA Grand Canyon. Pennsylvania has their own Grand Canyon in the wild. Route 6, the Laurel Highlands, upstate, the Pocono Mountains are beautiful for this. And then, of course, all of those other wonderful fall activities like cideries and pumpkin patches, scenic trails. And if you're into the spookiness, there are ghost rides in eastern Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh where you can encounter haunted hotels, hay rides, and maybe even the ghosts of some founding fathers.
Now, yeah, because an awful lot of history there, American history in the Keystone State as well. Now, that being said, yes, if you are thinking of doing something over the Labor Day weekend, again, last minute summer road trip is certainly possible.
Yes, definitely. Squeeze out those last few days. And if you have kids, you definitely have to check out the Crayola Factory. It is a must visit. It's a hands-on discovery center that's perfect for little explorers. And if you're looking for theme parks, there's Sesame Place, Hershey Park, or Knoebels. They're all great options. And for the outdoor lovers, Pennsylvania has 124 state parks. So you can go to waterfalls, waterways to explore, trails, kayaking, swimming, jet skiing, white water rafting. There's definitely something for everyone.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's just a short drive. Our neighbor to the east, Pennsylvania, there's a lot more there than maybe what you initially think about. Because, again, as you were saying, from the big cities to those remote areas, you know, it really, and you could do all of the above.
Exactly. And you don't have to go far. So you can squeeze it all into a 3-day weekend or even shorter. You really could just do everything. You don't have to pick and choose.
And it's close enough that if you don't get it all done in one weekend, you can go back again. So there's always that as well. Again, Michelle Gerson is a family travel expert, the founder of Passport Mommy. Where do we get more information?
You could just head to visitpa.com/getaway. You can check out everything that I talked about and all the ways to enjoy Pennsylvania.
We'll get a link up on our webpage as well. Michelle, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow, we take the show on the road. It's Good Mornings on the Go at opening day, the Hancock County Fair. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.